with Nike Corporation?
Well, Jean-Philippe Tremblay, we will link to Shadows of Liberty at our website and let people know where else it will be premiering in other parts of the world and in this country. As we wrap up our broadcast today, we are very excited to be broadcasting from the National Conference for Media Reform. Jean-Philippe Tremblay is a London-based filmmaker originally from Quebec. Well, starting at noon Eastern time today, you can watch a live stream of this conference on our website, democracynow.org. Also, Democracy Now! Has a job opening, an experienced annual giving manager to build viewer and listener financial support for our daily news hour. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Thanks to our amazing crew here in Denver Open Media, Tony Shawcross, Ann Tice, Jeremy Cannon, Chris Hogan, Brandon Stiller, Mike Hancock, Diana Alka. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And this is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And we are here today at Henry Ford Community College. It's an exciting, beautiful day in Dearborn, April the 5th. I won't mention the sports event that's taking place today, because if you're trying to listen live to us and you forgot about it, you might turn over immediately. Well, you can catch us on as a podcast, of course, after broadcast at 2 o'clock. It's going to be on our website, whfr.fm. In fact, they're selling a wide array of hot dogs and chili fries over in the grill. We're in the Student Center at Henry Ford Community College in honor of it being opening day.
It's not the same.
So, it's not the same as sitting in the stands and dripping the mustard all over yourself as you're eating it. That's
nothing like that.
The whole part of it. Yeah.
Now, I know you're not a huge sports fan, but have you ever been to an opening day, a Tiger game on the first day of the season?
No, I'm not that kind of sports fan, but I have been to Tiger games and so on.
Probably enjoyed it. Sure.
Being outdoors. I didn't know any better then, you know.
Oh, you're so funny. Yeah. We'll win you over one of these days.
it is important to be involved with local issues. As we always say, what matters to you most happens right next door, and nothing is more important than that, because, boy, if something explodes or goes crazy, or it's a matter of your kids' education and your own taxes and services where you live, nothing could be more important than that. So we're looking at the local newspapers, the Times Herald and the Press and Guide, as well as Patch.com and other sources here for this program, in case it's your first time tuning in. Joining me in the studio, my name is Jay Koronek, station advisor and host of the show, along with Dennis Reimars, who is our WHFR news director. And Dennis has the top story, the big story of the day, just happened last Wednesday, only on Patch.com, but we should have known about it on campus. I didn't even get an email from our PR director, but of course it's not totally final, but the story is there. So tell people what they want to know.
Well, as you said, there was a special meeting on Wednesday, and Henry Ford Community College, actually the Detroit Board of Education,
or Dearborn,
the Dearborn Board of Education, selected the next president of our esteemed college, HFCC. Now, it's important to note, they selected, based on, it says here in the Patch article, a pool of five people.
It was six.
Well, they say five.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, it's five others.
Okay,
along
that's
with
fair.
The guy that won. But,
regardless,
yeah.
They have a backup plan, because they said that just because he's selected, they were supposed to approach him yesterday, Mr. Stan Jensen, with beginning the contract negotiations. Mm-hmm. Now, as may happen, we talked about this off the air. Maybe his previous college, which was the Colorado.
Mountain College.
Now, they may, learning that he's going to leave, sweeten the pot. We don't know. Anyway, those are private negotiations.
Well, and there's other things, like even it was controversial here when the public first found out that Dr. Mee, as our president, she will be given sort of a golden parachute. They're not firing her, but in retirement, she gets a full year's pay, which is $183,000. just by choosing not to be here anymore. And this is pretty common in business and industry, and even at other colleges. Whether or not you're in agreement with it, folks, this is a deal breaker for some people who are considering a contract someplace. That if they're going to get fired, you know, abruptly terminated, or if they choose to leave, they want that extra bonus. You call it what you will, that extra payment. And so because there was a little criticism from the public about that, wow, you mean they get all that money for doing nothing extra. And so maybe they don't want to give the next candidate that same sort of bonus, if you will. And maybe he'll say, well, without it, I'm not coming. You know, except, boy, these qualified candidates, they hop around the country from one college to another. And if they get that 1 year salary bonus every time they leave, they can retire quite early, you know, one year in one place and 1 year in another place. And
I know 1 year is a short term, but
yeah, and I don't know if that looked good on your resume, you know, but after 3 or 4 years, and if you did a good job, that's enough to get another college presidency, let's say, somewhere else.
Exactly. And Dr. Mee, I think when she was on, we interview her here at the beginning, like in the fall each year.
Right.
And I believe she said, as she knew she was out, you know, she was leaving the school, that even, how long has she been here? This is her seventh year, I want to say?
Almost.
And she said that's a long time. The average is 5 years. And, of course, Mr. Jensen, who was leaving the Colorado Mountain College, he was there for almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the Arab American News, Patch quoted the Arab American News, the board voted 5-1 for Mr. Jensen, and the board president, Pamela Adams, said, quote, we're contacting Mr. Jensen. She said that'll be on Thursday to see if he's still interested in the job. And she said, we will talk to him about how soon he can get to Michigan and discuss the terms of a contract. So it's the process is now in full motion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's exciting.
And the alternate?
Gordon
number two.
May. Mm-hmm. Candidate Gordon May. He's the interim president of the Oakland Community College in Auburn Hills campus, and so he would be second choice.
Which is kind of interesting, and it does sound like a negative thing, but that campus actually has no students on it right now.
At all?
No.
Is it completely online? Or, oh, no kidding.
So that's what I've heard anyway, so it does raise the question, like, were they just going to fire him eventually, and that's why he's been looking around for other jobs? He did oversee other operations for OCC, and he has those other positive, but like there's something called the Pontiac Center that he ran for OCC, maybe special downtown classes offered by OCC in Pontiac.
Satellite campus, sure.
Perhaps. So he's had other things on his resume that show he's a good administrator of a variety of different, in a variety of different positions at OCC.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's kind of ironic, I don't think there's any students currently enrolled at Auburn Hills campus. So, but something else must be going on there. I mean, maybe he's helping to clean the floors. I don't know.
Sure.
And
if negotiations.
And we need some more maintenance people here, too.
We can always use that.
People that appreciate maintenance workers.
If the negotiations fall through, then I'm sure they'll contact Mr. May and we'll have a hold of
him. No, we're just joking about him, but he is the next one that would be in line if Mr. Jensen is not going to be the one. So we'll probably know within a week or two at the most. The board did not have to take one of the top six. If they weren't satisfied, they could have started the search all over, in fact, re-advertising and so on, or they could have dipped lower in the people that applied. There was obviously more than six people that applied,
right,
but they only invited six, what they thought, I guess, at the top six, to come and speak and be seen by the public and get other comments on them. So they could either go back to the pool, if you will, and swim around a little in that, or they could have started all over, and I think the reason it was a surprise to a lot of us, as I said, at campus, that they were going to have this public meeting, open meeting, last Wednesday here at HOCC, and they voted 5-1. So I would think they did an informal poll among themselves that, hey, we're ready to vote.
Yeah.
We know.
Yep.
You know, pretty clear to us, and so they did it, and so we're moving ahead on that, and we'll see who comes. And this is important. Why? For those of you in the community who, one president's like another. No, not at all. They have their priorities. They have their special interest in terms of curriculum program. Like one might come in saying, oh, we've got to do more for vocational education,
sure,
or one said we've got to do more for online, or one would have a priority of liberal arts. And And so give special focus or attention to those areas. So we'll have to wait and see what his priorities will be when he gets here. We don't have mountains like Colorado Mountain College, though, I bet.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they drive up north, but still.
We can direct him to the landfill in New Hudson.
Coming to an urban area is not going to be as physically attractive, but Michigan is attractive. It's not all flat.
Very attractive.
We do have trees.
And there's a heritage here in Dearborn. There's a tradition here that people know about Michigan, and a lot of it has to do with Dearborn. Mm-hmm. Has to do with this area.
And Henry Ford Community College, with all due humility, none at all, is well known across the country as one of the premier community colleges. Well, we've been here since 1938, so we've been around a long time. But our standards and our programs have been lauded and noticed nationwide for decades. And I think those standards are still being maintained pretty well. And so he's actually coming to a very prestigious community college from another community college that's not quite as big, almost as big, though, but certainly doesn't have the reputation that we have. So it's definitely it would be a step up for him, even if he has to sacrifice some scenery.
Is Colorado Mountain College a community college?
I believe it is.
It says the college is ranked 17th in the nation for student success as measured by graduation rates and transfer rates. That's excellent.
It could be fourth. It could be 4 years.
The transfer rates would indicate possibly a
transfer rates. Oh, it has to be 2 years. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was CC.
All right.
All righty. So, and moving on to the next big time story here. Let's stay with schools. It was in the Press and Guide last Sunday, the Easter edition, 331-13. And interestingly, that was on page 13A in that edition, but it's on page 1A at the top of the page of Times Herald this week from 2 days ago, April the 3rd. Dearborn schools are seeking input on the timing of the supplemental bond issue, not the renewal of the millage. That's going to be in November. But they have decided, remember we talked about last week on the show, if you're a regular listener, that two of the members of the board, just two, spoke up and said, well, we really ought to put this bond issue on November. I'm trying to use a different voice, not their voice.
Okay.
Not making fun of their voices, just a different voice. We really want to put it on the bond issue in November so that more people will have more time to think about it. Okay. And I said, why do you need more time to think about it? First of all, there's going to be 20 to 30. There's going to have to be, according to Brian Whiston, the superintendent, he has to lay off, fire 20 to 30 staff positions if this bond is not on the primary election ballot in the first week of August before school starts. Because if we don't get that money, then they're not going to have it in their regular budget they'll have to put it in their regular budget to fund the maintenance projects that this bond is for, and then they don't have enough money to pay all the staff. So 20 to 30 more teachers and or maintenance people and or whatever, and you know how many we've laid off every year, and we're getting more and more students in Dearborn every year. So this is unconscionable. And to delay this vote until November and lose another 30 employees? I mean, okay, you say, well, if we vote it down, then we're going to lose them too. Yes, that's right. If you want to vote this down, which would make no sense to yours truly, the maintenance projects are necessary, and it's true, one bond issue is going away, going bye-bye. And this one, coincidentally, if voted on and approved, it would replace it at the same amount.
So it's a renewal.
Different things, right. But it's actually if you vote on this bond issue in August, it'll be no increase in your taxes. Okay, and that matters to some people. Well, if it's no increase, but they got to have the maintenance, and it's good to keep the extra 20 to 30 people because we don't have enough people as it is now,
right,
to have an adequate school educational experience. Now, that's in my humble opinion. And what do we say about opinions?
Well, the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college or the station. It seems like a no-brainer, especially the way you outlined it. At the same time, there have to be certain things that we may not know for them to actually have to discuss this. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think the Board of Ed, in their ultimate wisdom, can decide this themselves.
Sure.
Get it over with. Get it done with. If you have to get the PR information out there before August, Dave Mustonen can do it.
Yes.
He's on staff. He'll take care of it, folks.
And he still has time to come in here and talk to us.
Oh, and that will definitely clear things up for all of our, at least our listeners. Right. But seriously, just make the decision. You have to have a ballot on the website. You know, only people that have internet are going to vote. It's not a scientific vote. It's not representative. And it's just a question of, do you want it, this question on the ballot in August, or do you want it in November? Well, duh. First you could say it doesn't matter, but I've just indicated why it does matter. 20 to 30 fewer jobs in the public schools and no additional cost to us, even if it passes, and those jobs are maintained. So I think they can decide this. But if you want to vote, everybody loves to give input. So if you want to vote, you can go to DearbornSchools.org. I think that's what it is. Or just Google Dearborn Schools. And right there, scroll down the page a little bit, you'll see the poll. And take the poll. Take the little teeny poll that the Press and Guide thought was so important news that they put it on page 13A. That's how important they thought it was. But never want to let people think that they can't be important and respond to a poll.
The Press and Guide probably this has been in the news pretty consistently. So, and you know, and I know, as things, even if they're advancing a story, the significance pushes it back to page 13.
Yeah, I think they got it earlier in the paper. The Times Herald maybe didn't have too many other stories left for Wednesday.
Oops.
And maybe they already had the big stories in print when this one got slipped in. So they put it in Section A, although their Section A, page 13, last Sunday, was a whole separate insert. It was like four pages folded that were labeled Section A, but in fact it wasn't in the fold of Section A.
Right.
And so it's often thrown away for that reason. But I think it was probably just a last-minute story that came in and said, well, let's toss it in because it's not a big deal, is it? No, it's not a big deal. So there you go. Something else about education happening this weekend here at Henry Ford Community College, for those of you who are interested. You know, have you heard that various religions don't like each other?
I've heard that.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Some of them even say, in fact, all but one that I know of, which is Church of Unity, the Unitarian religion, say that they are the one and true, the only religion.
Yeah.
So it's bound to cause conflicts if almost all of them, except Unitarian and maybe Church of the Unity, which is not always a church, but sometimes anyway, except for the unity experiences, they all say we are the one and true church, representing God. And, so there have been wars. We don't have to go over past history, do we? Thousands of years of conflicts because people didn't like each other because they don't believe in the same religion. And there's even a question, are you worshiping the same God?
Because right.
There's only one, and if you're worshiping one in your religion, it can't be ours.
Right.
Because our God wouldn't be your God, because it's a different religion. Duh. Well, that's just crazy, of course, in a lot of ways. And so we've had for several years now, and I can't remember if this is the third or fourth or fifth year of this, but we've had a conference organized by our World Religions Department, headed by Dr. Bill Sechrest, and it's called the Building Bridges of Understanding Conference. It is this weekend, April 5th and 6th, right here on the Henry Ford Community College main campus. And as we've said in the past, and maybe this is why I didn't mention it before, it does cost, but it's like two full days from like 9 to 6 of speakers and discussions and breakout sessions. And so a lot of religious leaders from all religions come to attend this to get some new ideas about how to have greater peace and understanding among religions, not for people to give up their religions or form one religion. Some people thought that was, what was that? No. Not at all. But how do we address specific major conflicts that are labeled religious in nature, and how do we facilitate and offer conflict resolution methods? How can we get past these things and bring peace and understanding in the world and still respect individual religions? Interestingly, to show you the kind of conflict, they have two keynote speakers. I wonder who's going to go first. Maybe decided by a flip of the coin?
Or an arm wrestle.
Okay. Imam Hassan Oz. And it's a typeface here thing. Ozwini. Ozwini, he is a keynote speaker. I because he's an imam, I would think he's Muslim, and Rabbi Dorit Edut, E-D-U-T.
Nice try.
And she, female, mm-hmm. rabbi, mm-hmm. In Jewish religion.
Very you can progressive.
Have females as rabbis. Well, we know certain Christian religions haven't been able to move that.
No.
Well, the Catholic religion. There's example of female priests, ministers in many other Christian religions, but not in the Catholic religion. Anyway, the two of them are keynote speakers. And also a Rob Dubois. He's the author of a book called Powerful Peace. So, they'll have to flip a three-headed coin to see who goes first there. But they have many panel discussions, individual presentations, social events, too, food conversation, artistic performances. And I especially wanted to mention, because I just found out today, is that all students currently enrolled at Henry Ford Community College with IDs, and all faculty and staff members of Henry Ford Community College are free for both days. You come one day, come both days, up to you. I assume the food is free, too. Oh, boy. Now, that's depending on if you haven't registered or even let them know, even for free, that you're coming. They have, capacity to the rooms, and maybe they only have so many lunches available. Sure. So that at this late date, walk-ins are fine. Now, if you did want to attend and you're not an HFCC student or faculty member, it is $25 a day or $40 if you want to attend both conferences. Just come on over to Henry Ford Community College. It's in our large conference building, the Mazzara building, administration building also on this campus. They're already setting up today, in fact. And, today is the 5th. They're setting up now because 8 a.m. they started today. So maybe tomorrow you want to come by at 8 a.m. and it does close at 3:30 p.m. But you can slide in any time today, especially if you're a HFCC member. I highly recommend it. They're just tremendous speakers. So maybe can talk to Bill Sechrist or one of the other organizers in the future here and get the story about what they learned.
See if any fights broke
conference.
Out.
Yeah. Right. We don't want to believe that would happen.
No. But. And like you said, Sechrist is extremely busy right now doing this. And I had him for two religion classes, and he is so good at focusing on what religions have in common as opposed to the differences. And right there, you get people on a more common ground, and it makes the whole process so much easier. Mm-hmm. You guys are a master at that. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll have him on here in the next few weeks. We'll get him.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm just going by interest here on my list of exciting stories I want to give you today. Peggy Richard is now writing a page in the Dearborn Times Herald. I think there's a similar page they give to the Dearborn Chamber or Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce,
Thank
as
you.
It is now, including Dearborn Heights. So the update, the news about businesses and the activities of the chamber, I think was probably written by Peggy Richard today, and she is the events coordinator, the number two person organizing the chamber. It's called the Chamber Chatter. Isn't that cute? It's in the Times Herald this last Wednesday. But one of the things that caught my eye was because it connects to WHFR and our big-time upcoming event starting a week from Sunday here, which is very exciting and so important, at least to Dennis and I. No, to the whole existence of WHFR this year. It's our annual Radiothon pledge drive. But Peggy wrote about Village Ford Dealership. They are proclaiming and very proud that they were the first dealership in Dearborn. And I think there's only two, literally, in Dearborn. Jorgensen is in Detroit, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right.
Okay. But they're the first Ford dealership in Dearborn to be certified to sell all-electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles.
Okay.
Because you have to have special certification, which means special training for your service people. You have to have parts supply in for those specialized engines. And
it seems like they turned a corner of sorts with that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a definite commitment. Like you said, it's probably not cheap for all that training.
That's one pun you did, but they're also getting a lot of mileage out of it, too.
Yeah, thanks.
That's the second pun we can do about this.
I was headed somewhere else, but good.
Yeah, okay. Good. So they turned the corner, and they're getting a lot of mileage here. And I'm sure that, the other Ford dealership, to be fair, is Fairlane Ford.
Sure.
And they'll probably be certified, too. Over 900 Ford dealers in Dearborn should be certified by fall to sell the Ford Focus Electric.
You mean in Michigan?
In Michigan,
okay.
Right. And also the so-called plug-in hybrids, which is the Ford calls them the Energy with an I at the end, the Energy models of the Ford C-Max, which is a little like van type thing. Right. Although some people say it's like a it looks like a Toyota Prius. So right. So I think it's more van-like or wagon-like, but it's sort of longer and sort of
sounds well, kind of sleek.
It's a little more van-like than the Escape. The Escape is a small SUV that Ford sells and has, I think, more window space and looks more like a traditional car. Well, the C-Max, it's very nice, and they have a plug-in hybrid version and coming out, and it's the Energy version of the C-Max. And the Energy, their plug-in hybrid is also being... is coming out for the Fusion, which is a very popular midsize sedan. It's been selling really well for Ford, I know. And the Energy model is their plug-in hybrid. So explain to people, Dennis, what a plug-in hybrid is, not putting you on the spot.
A plug-in hybrid, you have a limit to how much you can travel on the battery.
So
you
there's batteries.
It's basically the bottom line. And as we talked about, it's two
main. But why is it called a hybrid?
Because it also has a gas engine.
Right. So after your batteries wear out, which could be, and Ford was saying, I think, 30, 40 miles, so pretty far on batteries with the Fusion. That hasn't been confirmed by any test right now, but further on batteries than any other plug-in hybrid, further than the Chevy Volt and further than whatever else is out there. But then the gas engine comes on, and you can drive as much as you've got gas in the tank, or you can keep refilling the tank.
Right, but it is a smaller engine.
Right, and it's a somewhat smaller four-cylinder because they want it to be fuel economical anyway. But, so maybe you might not have the same sort of acceleration or power that you would from electric, because electric is usually pretty quick by comparison to other small engines. But you would still have an added range. So if you want to go to Chicago in a plug-in hybrid, no problem. 300 miles, no problem. When you get there, you get your extension cord out.
Yeah.
But you could still just fill up with gas and drive back from Chicago and plug back in when you get home.
Right.
So plug-in hybrid gives everybody that sort of safety margin. But the all-electric Ford Focus is their first all-electric car, and that goes about 75 miles on a charge. That's right, a full charge only goes 75 miles, and people say, well, that's no good for me. Well, no, if you have to drive further than, say, 35 miles each way, you can't do it.
Well, Dave Norwood, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, he said that was a little bit optimistic.
Yes.
He said that would be straight highway driving if you're moving in the city.
Good warm temperatures because it's not as far in the cold, and if there's ice and snow and you got to run your heater or your air conditioner, that all comes off the batteries.
Sure.
So you wouldn't quite get that. But I'd say, and it's safe to say, anybody driving 10 to 20 miles each way to work every day, that's probably safe enough, no matter the weather, to just use the all-electric car for that.
Sure.
And you want a longer weekend trip, you're going to need a different kind of vehicle.
Yeah, for now. Yeah. The technology will catch up, though.
Right, because there are electric cars out there, all-electric cars, that go 200, 300 miles on a charge, such as the car of the year last year, which was the Tesla Model S.
Mm-hmm.
And 250, 280 miles on a charge.
What's the price tag on that?
$65,000-$70,000.
It's a little prohibitive.
Yeah.
It really is.
But people that are buying BMWs, Mercedes-Benz sedans, right in the same ballpark. And this is faster, it handles well, and they got the range. Now, it's true that they might make it to Chicago, probably not. And the problem is there's no gas engine in the Tesla. So
you have to find a charging station.
You're going to have to find a charging station before you get to Chicago.
Right, absolutely.
Maybe
the hotel will have one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, stop in Kalamazoo. Charge up.
Sure.
You know, everybody loves downtown Kalamazoo, right? Anyway, just kidding. But I've been there. It's okay. It's a cute little college town. Anyway, Western Michigan University is there. I'm sure they've got a charging station. It's a college town. Ann Arbor's got charging stations all over. They've got a big push now to put them everywhere, parking lots and all over the place. And they're slowly, I see their city council's already voted to change all of their fleet cars to electric.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
So that's... We'll challenge Mayor O'Reilly with that news when he gets here on. Mayor O'Reilly is coming in this show, the full show, April 19th.
Yes.
It's 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
Wow, I better start writing down my questions. If you want to submit a question to the journal, you can do it by email, whfr@hfcc.edu. Just whfr at, this is the email address, HFCC for Henry Ford Community College, .edu. And just say question for the journal for the mayor, and we'll look at it and maybe we'll use it. Okay, if I haven't thought of it already, we'll take it up with Mayor O'Reilly. That's going to be all of our show on the 19th.
Can I do deviate and do a couple?
Well, we want to follow up about the electric car because, well, you just did an ad for Village Ford. No. You think that Ford Focus Electric is cool? You'd like to try it out? You'd like to drive it around town, show it to your friends? Because there's no sound at all. There's no gas engine. There's no fuel tank. There's no spark plugs, no oil. What an idea for the future. And it's a great little car. Handles well because all Ford Focus are known for that. We're going to give a weekend, Friday through Sunday, and maybe some of Monday morning, experience to one of our pledgers during our pledge drive, April 14th to 20th. So whatever you pledge, if you want to be entered in this additional drawing, it's fine, no extra charge for this. You have to be 21 or older, have a driver's license and automotive insurance already. But, yeah, you could win it. I'm sorry to say we don't have that many people that pledge, and so the odds are really good, much better than anything else that you could go into a drawing, and this is just so cool. Now, you know, you're only going to get 75 miles at best on a charge.
Sure.
And so you're going to, but they, Village Ford knows about that. They're going to give you a charging cable. They're going to give you some list of where charging stations are, like in Dearborn and elsewhere, and, maybe you want to go. You certainly can make it to Ann Arbor, and as I said, they've got a bunch of charging stations out there. Have a little weekend in Ann Arbor driving around. And then, so I think it'd be so cool. And of course, alternative ideas, new ideas, local ideas. That's what WHFR is all about. So our pledge drive starts on April 14th, a week from Sunday. You'll be hearing more about it. On the station, and of course, Mayor O'Reilly is actually going to be here during that week. And I know City Hall is very excited about our drawing because it's the way of the future that everybody has to go. The cost of running electric cars much less, and as batteries get better and better, that range thing won't be a big deal.
Sure.
We'll get more and more charging stations everywhere. Won't be that big a deal. It will be the way to go. If not for your next car, maybe the car after that. If you're concerned and you want to have that extra range, then you have to go with a plug-in hybrid.
And speaking of City Hall, so whoever wins this weekend with the Focus, there are charging stations. Dave Norwood confirmed this at City Hall. So if nothing else, you can head up there, charge up, wave to the mayor, and then go on about your way. Your day.
And they're free. And they're parking.
They're free. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, we have a couple comments here from our friendly populist out of Texas, Jim Hightower, and always challenging and entertaining. So please listen to these. We'll be back with more of the WHFR Journal for Friday, April the 5th.
Step right up, folks, and take your chances in the amazing new American workplace. Constantly high unemployment. Low wages always, no employee bargaining power, a corporate paradise. This paradise has enriched the already rich investor elite and rewarded top executives with multimillion-dollar pay packages. It also lets corporations treat the masses of people in today's workforce like Kleenexes. Just use them up and toss them. After all, they're cheap, plentiful, and disposable. Indeed, taskmasters in suits have now redefined the term hired to mean that you're tethered to a corporation full-time, but you actually work and get paid for only the few hours a week when the boss calls. This nefarious practice, known as on-call shifts, is all the rage among national retail chains. Such giants as Abercrombie & Fitch, Gap, and Urban Outfitters require employees to work without set schedules and to be available to have their string yanked at any time, day or night, even on weekends, with as little as 2 hours' notice. Likewise, if customer traffic in a store is slow, retail workers who got dressed up, battled the morning commute, and reported on time can simply be sent away after an hour or so, with no pay for their lost hours. A recent survey of some 400 retail employees in New York City found that only 17% have a set schedule. Those with no set hours also have no set income and no life. If you're at the beck and call of the boss, what do you do with your children? How do you make a doctor's appointment? What if you're taking a class or trying to work a second job? This is Jim Hightower saying, this shameful on-call practice says that the corporation owns you and that abuse of workers is a legitimate business practice in America. To help stop it, contact RetailActionProject.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Turf wars can be the silliest of all scuffles, and no place does silly with more zeal than Texas. For example, the fine people of Dallas recently fell into a doozy of a turf tussle between the natives and foreigners. And the foreigners are winning. The out-of-staters, hailing from such distant lands as Bermuda and St. Augustine, Florida, are not people, but turf grasses. Many homeowner associations, realtors, chambers of commerce, and city officials applaud and even mandate the use of such outliers to give a community that uniform, well-manicured, lush lawn look. The natives, on the other hand, are tufts of tenacious prairie grasses, prickly cacti, and rough rocks. Local elements that were landscape ages before lawns were invented and way before there was a Dallas. Enter Burton Knight, owner of a modest home in the city's Junius Heights neighborhood. In the interest of water conservation and in the interest of nature's own beauty, he ripped up his lawn and went native, creating a xeriscaped yard. Beautiful, but not in the eyes of the lawn lords who rule the local landmark commission and city planning office. Knight's problem, sniffed a planner who oversees the Junius Heights Historic District, is this. The lack of a lawn. There's none. Zero. She cited an ordinance that sets standards for such things. But all it says is landscaping must be appropriate. Well, wonders Knight, in this land of constant drought and a critical water shortage, how appropriate is it to keep landscaping with water-guzzling, chemical-demanding imported turf grasses? Besides, he adds, how can you say that cactus is not historic? This is Jim Hightower saying, this is, after all, Texas, the natural home of prickly pears and scrappy people. Loosen up, Dallas. Go native or give up your Texas passport.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Some always entertaining comments there about the craziness of some of the things in the world, but also ideas for people to respond and make comments to their representatives and to organize, and it's all good. That's all good. It's called democracy, folks, democracy in action. And this is a follow-up on the electric car deal and the special WHFR pledge drawing for the Ford Focus Electric to go to some lucky winner just for a weekend, but for a weekend. And that's going to be from our friends at Village Ford. They're providing that, and we thank you very much for that. But also this week was a big week for electric cars in Detroit because the Detroit Electric Car Company, electric company, not the DTE, but the Detroit Electric Company, which was the name of a Detroit automotive company all the way in the 20s through the 1930s, and they produced over 13,000 cars in those decades, all electric-only powered. In fact, according to my sources and my visits to Henry Ford Museum, I talked to the curator there, Henry Ford himself bought an all-electric car for his wife, Clara.
Really?
Yeah, because she didn't want to have to crank it. You know, to start it. They didn't have electric start motors, right, in those days. And so she just wanted to get in the car and be able to drive. and not have to hassle with fuel and gas and fumes and the dirt and the oil that would require you getting under the hood and operating that crank sometimes. And so it has its successful run. And then, of course, when the automotive starter engine replaced the crank, that was kind of the death of the electric car because people just push a button or turn the key in the ignition, and it would actually start up.
So do you think that what I think is interesting is Henry Ford thought that the vehicle was good enough for his wife. He was so forward-thinking. It would stand to reason that maybe he would say, how many other wives and mothers are out there that might benefit from this?
I think even then, though, he saw it as a limited marketing thing. He was always interested in selling the most cars he could possibly
absolutely
make.
Even at a lower price.
A big scale for everybody. And I think he saw that the gasoline engines in his day were superior. There was the cranking problem for women who might have the car only for themselves or want to drive it, but wasn't primarily women buying these gadgets.
Sure.
It was a male thing, toys for boys,
right.
Buying a car, what is a motor car, I think that's why he did experiment with some electric powered cars that didn't work out around 1910, I think, and historically I'm probably way off, sorry Henry Ford Museum people. But I think he actually had a Detroit motor car electric for Clara, if not one of his own then that he kept for her. In any event, a new car is being made in Detroit by this new company who have rechristened. They renamed themselves the same name as the company from before. That's sort of a religious reference anyway, so they have nothing to do with Christianity here. So
Christening,
right. They've rechristened themselves. I got it. What is it? Well, if anybody remembers the Tesla Motor Car Company, which I just mentioned, their first all-electric car about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, was this two-seat sports car. It was a Lotus sports car from England that they just took out the gas engine and they put in batteries and the electric motor. And it got rave reviews and was bought by a lot of rich people, even George Clooney, movie actor, Jay Leno.
Because that price tag is how much?
Well, it started out, it was only $65,000, but that was about 10 years ago. And when they finished selling the last Tesla Roadster, as they called it, it was about $105,000-$110,000, and then they decided to switch to only this Model S, the big the four-door luxury sedan version that we talked about earlier. This car, I guess you could order it. I'm not sure when the availability is. The first one will be out there. They're only going to make 999 because they made 1,000. They'd have to put it up for all kinds of federal government testing and give them like half dozen or more cars to smash into a wall, and as a small car manufacturer, you can't afford to do that. So the car will be, as they say, totally certified according to European standards.
Okay.
So it's not like you're getting a car that's totally unsafe and is going to fall apart if you bump into your garage door or something with it. So I don't know how they test or what they require for European car safety standards. All I know is they must be adequate because everybody knows the European Union has a lot of product safety standards, including those for cars. So it will meet the European standards. When it's sold in the U.S., it doesn't have to because they're only going to make 999. Nonetheless, about $135,000 each. So more than the Tesla, but allowing for inflation, about the same price as the Tesla two-seat car. And because the car company was reformed with a fellow that used to work for Lotus in England, the car company that provided the car for Tesla to remake, that's what they're using again, the Lotus Exige, E-X-I-G-E.
And you can't say christening? But you just said Ajij.
I know. I said Ajij. So that's what they're getting over here, but they're making even more changes than Tesla did in terms of putting electric motors and so on. It's going to have a range not quite as far as the Tesla, but 180 miles.
Okay.
So, again, you can't quite get to Chicago, but here comes Lansing and Kalamazoo. Yeah. So good luck to them. That's another thing made in Detroit. I found also another made in Detroit product, startups. I think it's because buying the buildings the storefront is so cheap in Detroit.
Oh, you're not kidding.
And there's certainly a lot of workers, auto workers and so on, that you can bring in who have a lot of experience. Wristwatches. I can't remember the name of the company, but there's now wristwatches
Rolex.
Made in Detroit, and they're being advertised worldwide. They're quartz crystal. They got a battery in them.
Right.
They're only about $300, $550 each, and they're already sold out. Hmm. The first couple thousand collector's items, and they got a nice manly look, you know. And
that's cool.
And so sort of like. Carhartt, that's a manufacturer of work clothes,
mm-hmm.
and they're actually got their headquarters right here in Dearborn, and their warehouses are in Detroit area, and they have now a special contract to make all the logo items for Chrysler Corporation. So if you buy a Jeep T-shirt or hat or whatever, the logo items from now on are going to be made in Detroit,
okay.
Which is cool. Previously, because I bought, I think something. I had a Jeep Cherokee in the 1990s for a few years, and but that T-shirt was made in Mexico.
Oh, see.
But the car was, you know, built in Toledo. But
right.
Oh well. Okay, so good luck to the Detroit Motor Car Company, and no disservice to Ford because it's totally different products, first of all.
Yeah.
So, but if you missed out on getting a Tesla Roadster for $110,000, this is only a little bit more and helps support Detroit, $135,000. So, all right. So, Dennis, you have you're the expert since you actually work in a job at Dearborn Heights City Government. Tell us what's happening in Dearborn Heights.
So much. Monday, the 8th.
April
8th. Yeah, you're just on the edge of your seat.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
I'm so excited.
In April 1963, Dearborn Heights officially became a city. So on Monday, April 8th, the city is celebrating their 50th anniversary, and they're going to have a big party at 4:30 p.m. Everybody can go, and everybody's invited, all the city residents, and I'm sure some of the other people that are just interested in some of the origins of Dearborn Heights. And they go to City Hall, and there's a lot of things up on the wall. It's like a wall of fame kind of thing. Different residents have photos, old photos and stories, and you can kind of peruse that as you go in. And then they have this giant cake, and they're cutting the cake, and they're confident there will be a piece for everybody. So anybody that comes in will get a piece of cake. And then at 6:30, right across the street is the library. Caroline Kennedy mm-hmm. Library,
yeah.
And Mike McCaffrey, who is the head of the library there and all of the libraries in Dearborn Heights, he's putting on a presentation at 6:30. Again, going back. He's going back to the 1700s in the mm-hmm. history of the area, and it sounds quite fascinating. And they expect quite a few people, but there is enough room for everybody. If there's overflow, they have other spaces designed for that. So that's all happening on Monday, April 8th, in the city of Dearborn Heights. It's first of all at City Hall, and then across the street at the library. I also wanted to recognize these are actually Dearborn High School students, but they're Dearborn Heights residents. Dearborn High School seniors Lara Fawaz and Ali Ajami. They were named Athletes of the Year by the Dearborn Recreation and Parks Department at the 61st annual.
Dearborn or Dearborn Heights?
Dearborn.
Oh.
They go to Dearborn High, but they're Dearborn Heights residents.
Okay.
And this was the 61st annual sports award ceremony.
Excuse me,
Sunday.
Why was that? Because they opted to do it? And why didn't they go to high school in Dearborn Heights?
You know, I don't know that.
Because they didn't have the sports programs?
Well, they have sports programs in the different, you know, Crestwood.
I know you can select, it, no matter what city you live in, you can apply and ask to go to another city's schools.
You can. And for all we know, maybe the families lived in the Dearborn area and then moved and they kept the kids there. I really don't know yet.
And they got this wonderful award, Van Patrick. I remember him. He was a broadcaster, sports broadcaster in Detroit, right out of WKMH, as they used to call it, that was here in Dearborn in those days.
A radio and television host.
Right.
Yep.
And we don't know if there's any money involved in that award. But what I thought was great was that at least the woman you mentioned to me is a 4.0 student.
Listen to this. Yeah, senior Lara Fawaz, she was honored at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center for her leadership on and off the court because she's 4 years basketball and tennis. So she lettered in tennis and basketball all 4 years in high school, and she has a 4.4 GPA. I spoke with her mother this morning because we're going to have her on the television show. She and Ali have agreed to an interview. And her mom says, yeah, you know, we got to make sure we get the interview done because she's taking advanced placement tests in May.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this going on. So that's Lara's story. And then we have her name is spelled
There's no reason, in fact, no excuse why someone out for sports can't be a good student. Now, maybe you don't have to get a 4.0, but to just, you know, barely be making a C or something and being out for sports, just hanging in there because you think, well, sports are going to be my life. Remember, the odds are against that, whether it's a matter of injury or maybe you're just not good enough. So that is not the way to plan your life for a sports career. So you need to be a good student, at least a C, if not a B or an A. A B and an A, that's what really makes it. That shows you're really learning something. So,
well, listen to this guy, though.
Great example here with Lara, too.
Ali Ajami, she spells her name the same way our Lara does, L-A-R-A.
Lara.
Anyway, Ali Ajami was also named Athlete of the Year, and he played on the varsity football team for the past 4 years. He was named the Dearborn Press and Guide's Player of the Year, and he's also, this is great, the editor of the Dearborn High School student newspaper, a member of the school's Link Crew program, so he mentors the freshmen as they come in. Mm-hmm. He has a group of freshmen that he mentors, and in addition to that, he was also, this is my favorite, in addition to these extracurricular activities, he's volunteered with the Dearborn High School Key Club to package canned goods for needy families in Dearborn. This guy, I mean, these are really good kids, and just congratulations to them, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about them in the future.
Okay, I just said one other thing, and we're going to have a special comment from Stephen J. Dubner of Freakonomics Radio.
He's
and
awesome.
I always feature his podcast frequently. The real story about economics and what the costs are for doing various things in society, because tax day is coming 10 days away. If you haven't got your taxes in for federal and state, you might be in trouble. But the city of Dearborn wants us to tell you that everybody's invited to an April 8th, that's Monday's, informational meeting on the train station district planning. Yeah, it's in West Dearborn there. They will take question and answers from, and comments and suggestions from the community. Probably last chance to do this. It's going to be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center in their Studio A multipurpose room from 7 to 9 p.m. That's this coming Monday, April 8th, informational meeting on the train station district. That's all of the WHFR journal for today. Stay tuned for Highway 61 at 2 o'clock, but here's Stephen J. Dubner and his comment about the tax man. Thanks for listening.
From APM, American Public Media, and WNYC, this is Freakonomics Radio on Marketplace. Here's today's host of Marketplace, Sarah Gardner.
It's Freakonomics time. Every couple of weeks, we talk to Stephen Dubner. He's co-author of the books and blog about the hidden side of everything. Stephen, it's good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Sarah. Thanks for having me. It is April, which is every taxpayer's favorite month, of course.
Yeah.
I thought today what we should do is take a look at the tax code we're stuck with for now and see if there are some improvements, however slight, that we should be thinking about.
Okay, so what kind of things are we talking about here?
Well, one of the biggest failures of the current system is also the most obvious, which is that the IRS fails to collect a huge portion of the taxes that are levied, that are legitimately owed. So about 17% of the total tax bill, which is more than $450 billion a year.
Whoa, what? Say that again. 17%?
Yeah.
That's pretty astounding.
It's a big number. It's called the tax gap. It's about $450 billion a year. The biggest contributor to this gap by far is very simple cash. It's all the cash that people earn and simply don't report to the IRS. Austin Goolsbee was the top White House economist under President Obama. We asked him why the government doesn't go after all that easy money.
Most of the non-collected money, for example, could be tracked and hunted down if you required small businesses to really report everything about their activity. But nobody wants to do that because that'd be so onerous and such a pain in the rear for small business owners that as a policy decision, they don't want to do it.
So in other words, Stephen, politically, it's too dangerous. It'd be like the Small Business Harassment Act if they went after small businesses really hard.
Exactly. Even though these people are supposed to be paying taxes on that money, and even though, interestingly, the rest of us who don't pocket a lot of unreported cash, you know, we're subsidizing them. That's not to say that there aren't ways to nudge people to pay their taxes without hunting and tracking them down, as Austin Goolsbee says. One of my favorite examples of this comes from a small unit in the British government called the Behavioral Insights Team. And what they do is experiment with all kinds of cheap and simple nudges. For instance, sending out letters that appeal to the herd mentality in all of us. Here is the unit's director, David Halpern.
So what we do is we simply tell people something which is true, which is 9 out of 10 people in Britain pay their tax on time. And by putting that single bit of information into the top of a letter, it makes people much more likely themselves to pay the tax on time.
So it's pure pressure.
It's exactly right. We like to run with the herd. They also tried another super simple trick, which was just handwriting a message on the outside of the tax envelope. This message would just say simply that the contents are important, but it's written in hand.
And of course, people are like, oh my God, but how can that possibly be practical? Well, we've now just got the results in. It turns out that for every pound or every dollar that you spend on getting, you know, someone to write on the envelope, you get $2,000 return. The $1,000 to $2,000 return. So it's a nice, simple illustration of these small things and how consequential they are.
So it sounds like peer pressure and the personal touch. Those aren't bad ideas, really.
They're great ideas. They're small. They're on the margin. They also have the collective result of trying to make taxpaying a little bit more, I don't know if fun is the right word, but, you know, the way the tax system is currently set up, we see paying taxes as pure downside, right? Not only does it cost us money, but it's on top of that. It's complicated. It gives us angst. And maybe worst of all, any given person has practically no say in how your hard-earned tax dollars are actually going to be spent, right? So Dan Ariely, who's a behavioral psychologist at Duke, he has a nice idea. It's to let taxpayers direct a small portion of their tax money to the parts of the government that they most care about.
So I'm not sure what's the right percent, 5%, 10%, but what if we got people to have a say about where some of the taxes go? All of a sudden, you're not looking at it as you against the government. You'd have to look carefully at all that the government is doing for us, building libraries and roads and education and military, so on and so forth, and say, what do I care about?
I don't know about that. I mean, what do you think? It would be fascinating to see how many people would really want to say, gee, I want to put more money into defense or Medicare, you know?
A lot of military families out there who really feel like the military gets the short shrift. That's the thing. But you're right. The first thing you said, I absolutely agree with. We don't really know because we've never really asked and we've never really given the opportunity for people to say.
So, Stephen, what about you? Where would you put your 5 or 10%?
I think that's pretty obvious, Sarah, don't you think? I'd send it to a slush fund for people who make radio about economics.
Oh, okay. Stephen Dubner, our Freakonomics correspondent. He puts out a podcast, too. You can get that on iTunes and hear more at Freakonomics.com. Stephen, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Hey, podcast listeners, you heard a little bit in this episode from David Halpern, who runs the British government's Behavioral Insights team. They are more informally called the Nudge Unit, after the book Nudge by the American academics Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. Halpern himself is an academic, very well regarded, and it's encouraging, to me at least, to see him putting so many academic ideas to work in a government job. So let's hear a little bit more from our interview with Halpern. Here he is talking generally about the Nudge Unit's mission.
Well, we think that if you have a more nuanced understanding of how people actually make decisions or what drives behavior, you can design policy that's better, it's cheaper, it's easier, it's more effective for people. So, for example, people often worry about, you know, how we can use a tax subsidy to get more people in employment or saving or whatever it will be. We're obsessed about the tiny details. We're obsessed about the little inconveniences and hassles that get in the way of people being able to do things, which maybe have traditionally got a lot less attention. Not only because, you know, they can often be annoying for citizens, but if you can get rid of those frictions, those details, those problems, everything works better.
So the Nudge Unit nudges people with experiments, with clever incentives, often in areas that most of us don't give much thought to. Addicts, for instance.
One nice one we tried may appeal to people over there is that very large numbers of people haven't insulated their homes enough in Britain. And even though for years we offer great big subsidies to encourage people to insulate their home, the interesting thing about this is it's a no-brainer, right, as we would say. You know, you get your money back in the first year, so why don't people insulate their lofts, their attics, I guess you'd call them? And, well, of course, when you're looking into it, the reason why most people don't do it is because their attic's full of stuff they should have thrown out years ago. And that's the real reason. So giving them ever bigger subsidies doesn't really work very well. So we ran a trial instead by offering people an attic clearance scheme, which, by the way, they have to pay for, but it's fine. And we found that that increased by 3 to 5-fold the uptake of people getting their attics insulated. And it didn't require more money or subsidy from government. It just required offering this service in a way which was convenient for people.
Maybe it's just his accent, I don't know. But Halpern strikes me as quite clever, maybe also wise. And there's the novelty of hearing about a government trying to make life simpler for its citizens rather than more complicated.
Well, I hope for many people their experience of this will ultimately is it'll just be easier. Just life will be easier. Instead of thinking of your taxes, this, I mean, fine, no one wants to pay their taxes, probably, right? But at least let's make it as easy as possible and as frictionless as possible, and you get letters which are tailored to you and so on. So you'll get a sense of government which is really efficient and effective in the way it operates, in its details. And that's true, of course, particularly around big areas of policy, be it from, you know, boosting economic growth or improving fuel efficiency or a million other things.
So that was David Halpern from the British government's Behavioral Insights team. Coming up on the next Freakonomics Radio, we ask a seemingly simple question. How much does your name really matter? From the unusual names? Can you give us your full name?
Yeah, sure. Yo, Shing, Haino, Augustus, Eisner, Alexander, Weiser, Knuckles, Jeremijenko, Connolly.
To the black and white names?
Molly, Madeline, Caitlin, and Emma. Imani, Ebony, Precious, Deja, Diamond.
To the red and the blue names.
In the conservative house, the girls would have names like Casey, McKenzie, Jordan, Taylor, and Sarah. In our liberal house, they would have names like Lola, Mia, Thea, Eliana, and Ruby.
Everybody's got a name. What does yours say about you? That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College.